It is Locked On Jazz for the 14th of March. Jazz do in Phoenix what the Jazz should do. Are they consistent or inconsistent? And it's a Thursday live edition, so we'll be taking your questions. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, a lot of geeky numbers as well for you. And today we're answering your questions on the show live, as it's a Facebook Live edition of Locked On Jazz. Really fun to be with you. Thanks, everybody, for the nice comments about yesterday's show. Tried to think that one out and do it appropriately. Ben Golliver joined me for Locked On NBA today. That is up and available. It was a fun conversation. Love having our national experts with our local experts on the Locked On Podcast Network. If you're an NFL fan, Mike Sando and Matt Williamson today on Locked On NFL are just terrific. And then the local experts are breaking down all the major stories that are going on. So we've got a lot of great stuff for you. Let's walk through a little bit. We haven't done our playoff push for a little bit, so let's kind of update where everything sits on that last night, and follow that with Portland and Houston and all those various matchups that are taking place. There's a big Sacramento kind of season should come to an end here in a few days to relieve any pressure if you wonder if we're going to make the playoffs or not. But let's walk through it. So Denver, I haven't updated this in 2 days. So Denver beat Minnesota in a 78% win game the other day. So Denver just kind of keeps doing what Denver should do, and probably will hold to that number two spot as time, as in all likelihood, but it's not going to be easy with Houston coming. They're 3-1 in their four 60-80% games, right where they should be. They're 1-1 in their certain wins. They had that one surprise loss. Oklahoma City beat Brooklyn last night. They trailed half most of the game, held on to win. That was a 87% win, so they did exactly what they were supposed to. Portland went into LA. We didn't talk about this yesterday, but a really big win for them and an important win, frankly, for the Jazz in trying to get the sixth spot if you want it. I don't know what the difference between six and seven is going to be yet. Depends whether it's Houston or Denver, and I don't think there's any question that you'd rather have Denver, not because they're that much less good, just because they don't have the playoff experience. And I think there's a legitimate question of whether Nikola Jokic is a defensive liability that gets exposed in the playoffs. He's so brilliant offensively, but we have not seen what happens to him in the playoffs yet. So for Portland to go and win that 60% game last night or two nights ago, that was big. Both for Portland to hold, possibly getting that third seed, but also to the Jazz not getting caught by the Clippers. San Antonio won Portland, by the way, is now 2-0 in their two of their nine should-win games. They've really been great. Terry Stotts doing a heck of a job. San Antonio had a 50-50 game against Dallas and won it. San Antonio is now 4-1 in those pick'em games. Pretty impressive of what they're doing. Clippers lost that one. As we mentioned just a moment ago, the Clippers go to 2-1 in their pick'em games, and they actually go to 3-1 in their unlikely games, and then we've stopped doing the Lakers. And then adding last night, Houston had a 44-win possibility against the Warriors because it was at home and they lose, so that was a pick'em game for them. Even though it's the Warriors, the Jazz had a 77-win possibility last night, and they win over Phoenix. The Jazz are now 2-2 in four should-win 60-80% games. That's the area where they're going to have to improve. That's tonight against Minnesota. That's coming. There's a few of those that are coming up here in the next few nights. So just to update it, certain wins, which were 80-100%, 11-2, pretty much where we thought. Should wins, 16-10, a little less. Pick'ems, 12-11. Unlikelies, actually, we're 10-8. Teams are 10-8 and 2-5. And if we take a quick look at the 538, and then we'll break down last night's game. Good article, by the way, by Chris Herring today on the turnovers and the lack of turnovers in the league. Warriors still won. Nuggets are up to 54 wins, and the Rockets are down to 52. So that little swing the last few nights turns out to be pretty big. The Blazers are at 51 for the four seed. So the Rockets are now projected to be the three seed. The Blazers, the four seed, tied with the Thunder at 51. Jazz coming in at 49 now. Clippers and Spurs at 46. So lining up that the dang Rockets, which is, I just think, the team you least want to play in the first round of these choices, is where we might be looking to see things. So that's the unfortunate reality of what we're looking at. Last night, the Jazz did what they should do. I thought that was a really solid performance. I don't think you ever thought they were in trouble. They did the dominant defensive performance we always talk about, or I always talk about, that is the defensive rating of under 100. It was there last night. I changed my password for my program, and I don't think I remember what it was. This is unfortunate. Yeah, I don't remember my password. Ah, that's a problem. That's the access to all my special geeky numbers. But last night, the Jazz defense was back under 100 where it should be. They took an incredible, like almost 50% of their shots at the rim last night. I think it was about 47% at the rim last night, according to Cleaning the Glass. And so there's been a lot of discussion the last few days about, well, have they been taking too many threes? The way it works, defenses can generally take away the rim. If a defense really wants to commit that we're going to take away the rim from you, then there's not a lot you can do. I mean, really, there's just not a lot. And particularly if they have the personnel. Phoenix doesn't have the personnel, so the Jazz took 47% of their shots as rim shots. They only took 18% of their shots as mid-range shots. It's not that they took less threes last night. It's that they took more shots at the rim. So when you hear people talking, well, we took 91 threes in two games. And No. What's your other choice? Your other choice is the rim. There's really almost no scenario unless it's an individual player like Donovan Mitchell trying to create and open things up for the for you yourself to get going. Because if Donovan takes some mid-range shots, it should open up some other possibilities. Dang it. Tried it again. Didn't work again. What did I do? I want my numbers. Ah! It just worked. Boom! Boom, 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 pow! Yes! All right. But you, if a team is completely dedicated to taking away the rim, they can do that. And Phoenix is just not capable of that. I mean, Rudy annihilated DeAndre Ayton last night in an almost unfair manner. And so the Jazz rolled. Last night was the defensive rating was a 97.9. The night before was a 97.1 against New Orleans, a 95.6. You know, here very subtly, by the way, the Jazz have suddenly had five of their last eight games with a defensive rating back under 100. So they're actually maybe playing pretty well. Five of their last eight games against the Clippers, the Nuggets, the Pelicans, the Thunder, and the Suns, those are some pretty good teams. The defensive rating has gotten back under 100. Sorry, that was all very convoluted. I was talking about threes, and I just went to that. So now let's go back to the shooting area thing. The Thunder, because of the way they play, force you into late shot clock threes. They take away the rim. They make it very difficult for you to be able to make some of those plays. And they take away the rim. Milwaukee takes away the rim. Those are the teams in the league that take away the rim. When you play one of them, you can, you know, we can all sit here and say, well, you got to commit. Nah, I really, you know, we take away the rim. We allow the fourth fewest amount of shots at the rim. You're not getting to the rim against us. It's just probably not going to happen. So last night, you're playing Phoenix, who's 30th in the league at allowing shots at the rim, and we took 42. Oklahoma City actually gets beat at the rim a little bit because of their trapping defense and things of that nature. We didn't take probably as good an advantage as we should. We took 31. Memphis is one of the better teams at taking away the rim. We took 24. The Pelicans are, I think, let me make sure, because I'm actually not sure where they sit anymore. I think they're distinctly average. They are. They're distinctly average. We took 34. We took 29. We took 32 shots at the rim against Milwaukee, who's the best team in the league. That our offense is getting 30 shots a night plus at the rim. It's pretty awesome. You know, we take the sixth most amount of shots at the rim of the league. And then we take the eighth most amount of threes. It's really, there's only three teams in the NBA that are in the top 10 in both categories. Milwaukee takes the second most rim shots and the second most threes. Atlanta takes the third most rim shots and the fifth most threes. And the Jazz take the sixth most rim shots and the eighth most threes. We add in corner threes, we take the second most corner threes. Atlanta takes the third, Milwaukee takes the eighth. The two best shots are rim and corner three. We're sixth at the rim, second in corner threes. Atlanta's third and third, and Milwaukee's second and eighth. Interesting, all those coaches were came out of the similar kind of school of thought of how to do things. So that, I think, when you talk about the too many threes, I'm not sure I'm buying. Gordon, you know, a bunch of guys asked me. Gordon asked me yesterday on the show whether or not I thought we were inconsistent. I want to touch on that when we come back, because guess what? I don't really buy that either. Like, we don't win every night, but that's not who we are. Like, I don't think we're that good. So we don't win every night, but I'm not sure that it's a sign of us being inconsistent. You guys, I went to the coolest place the other day. I had never been to this before. I went to the barbecue supply pit. It was so cool. I went up to the Layton store. I met this guy, Kennedy, who is the amazing. The passion and the love for barbecue is just totally overwhelming. I don't know if you've heard of, there's three stores. They're in Lehigh. They're in Logan. No, excuse me. They're in Layton. And they're in Salt Lake now. It's called the Barbecue Pit Stop. It's the best way to describe it is it's a golf shop, but for barbecue aficionados. It's totally amazing. So I didn't know anything about it. I'm not a big barbecue guy. I'm now in. Like, this got me. Like, I'm totally in. They have rubs for everything. Amazing. And they're like right near, the one up in Layton is right near Hill Air Force Base. And so they were telling me how, you know, you have all the guys from different parts of the country come in and they want their different types of rubs. Truly, the best way to describe it, Barbecue Pit Stop, is if you're a golf aficionado or a fly fisherman or something like that, and you wanted that kind of store where they have every rub and they sample like 40 different sauces for you and they have every grill you can imagine. And it's like having every driver and every putter and every rod and every string. They have it all in one little place. The coolest thing is there was a guy who came into the store when we were there who I guess bought like 3 years ago and comes in like once a week for advice. So it's totally cool. It's like a barbecue hobby store, specialty items, and specialty advice. It's all at the Barbecue Pit Stop. I'll tell you more about it as time goes by. I loved it. I had the greatest time there. You have extensive selection, amazing expertise, and you have a lifelong barbecue advisor in who you meet. Kennedy at the Layton store, passion forever. And I love people with passion. All right. Let's get to the idea of whether or not we're inconsistent. I think it's an interesting question. You can find a game or two, there's no question. But from a big picture standpoint, we are 38-29 against 500 teams this year. We're 18-22. Which means against non-500 teams, we're 20-7. Isn't that exactly what you would think we would do? Okay, so maybe you wish we were like 20-20 against above 500 teams. But when we play Houston or Golden State or even Oklahoma City, as clearly we lost them four times, doesn't it kind of feel like they have an element where they've got a few more weapons and it's going to take us a pretty incredible team effort to go get there? And so I'm not sure that I buy the premise of us being an inconsistent team. I actually think the opposite. We've only lost of the really bad teams in the NBA. And that loss to New Orleans at home the other day wasn't great. Okay. But then went and got them in their building, and I'm not sure in that setting you're actually winning both those games. I mean, it just sucks to play. Like, we're going to lose to Phoenix, guys. We're playing Phoenix three times in like 20 days. You're going to lose a game. Like, these, they're not dreadful. They beat Milwaukee and Golden State recently. We're going to lose one of those games. That's just the way it works. But if you look at the NBA standings, we talked about this all year, that there's eight teams in the East that aren't good, and there's only one team in the West that's not good, and that's Phoenix. And we did it based on negative differential, so that was Cleveland and Phoenix and the Knicks and the Bulls and the Hawks. And I don't remember if Washington was in at the time. Orlando was. They're now not. Detroit, I think, was in it. They're now not. We haven't lost to any of those teams, except for Orlando in Mexico City, which was just not an NBA game. So we haven't, like, in the sense of being inconsistent, I'm not sure I buy it. Excessive expectations? Maybe. And that's fine. I had them too. But we're just not way better than most of the teams we're playing. Last night, we looked way better than Phoenix. They're just so young. They do so many bad things. But we're, right? I don't think that's a fair, that we're way better than a lot of people. All right, let's get your questions. That's why we do the live show. When we push the pace, are we a much better team? The flow looks far better. Well, in theory, you're better offensively. That's the idea there, right? Is that as a shot clock goes on, you're better offensively. The sooner you get it off, right? So if you score between eight, if the Jazz score between 18 and 22 on the shot clock, the Jazz are 58% effective field goal percentage with their shot. Now, they're also about 23rd in the league at that. They're not very good then. Between 15 and 18 on the clock, we're at 53% effective field goal percentage. We're about 20th in the league. In the middle of the shot clock, from 7 to 15, we're at 53.8. This is where we're very different than other teams. So we're the fifth best team in the league, tied for fourth best team in the league shooting from 7 to 15 on the clock. We actually shoot better on the clock from 7 to 15 on the clock than we do from 15 to 18, which is almost unheard of. And frankly, the difference between us 57.7 and then what we are at 53.7 between the early clock and the middle is smaller than most teams. The minute you start getting late into the clock, it's really hard to play offense. So watch this. 53.7, we're tied for fourth best in the league. Only Golden State, Milwaukee, and the Sixers are better. We get to 4 to 7 on the clock, and crazy, we actually still get better at 54% effective field goal percentage. So 4 to 7, 7 to 15, we're actually better than 15 to 18. So I'm not sure that I think our pushing the pace thing that we're trying to do all the time and us jumping from 28th in the league in pace to 11th is actually worth it. I kind of like the old style of us pounding and beating, and the league's going that way. You got to do it. Players want to play that way. There's some level of you just got to do it. But we're actually stunningly at 54%. And we're fourth best. And then late in the clock, if you get in the final 4 seconds of the clock, it falls off, you drop to 40. So the real thing is you got to make sure you don't get in those final 4 seconds. It gets ugly. Here's what's so wild about what you just touched on. This is a great question, Josh. So the league average, I'm just going to kind of guesstimate here. The league average from 18 to 22 on the clock, when you know, early offense, you've pushed it up, you're firing ahead, you either fire that early transition, is a 59% effective field goal percentage. And as I said, we're not very good at that. We're about a point and a half below that. Then you get to this second early, it's 15 to 18. And the league average is 54% effective field goal percentage. Effective field goal percentage weighs three-point shooting. And again, we're a little below average. The rest of the league gets into the middle of the shot clock and drops to 52% from 7 to 15 on the shot clock. Now, we turn it over a lot, so some of this is a little misleading because it's not. I don't necessarily have what I have here is shooting. I don't have offensive rating, which would be nice. It would be a better number, frankly. But the league average, so we went from 59 to 54 to 52. So the league average is falling. We're doing the opposite. We now get better. It's crazy. 4 to 7 on the shot clock. The league average drops another 3 percentage points. Like, the early shot clock is, this is pretty easy, kind of an easy way to remember it. 59%, 60%, call it. You then drop to 54. This is the number you have to remember at 15 to 18. And then you just start dropping 2 percentage points. Until you get to the bottom of the shot clock, and then the bottom falls out. It's not quite right, but it's an easier way to think about it. So 54, 52, it's actually 49. And when the league's at 49, we're still at 54%. We're 2 percentage points better in the middle of the shot clock. We're 5 percentage points better than the late 4 to 7. And then when you get to 0 to 4, you're just dead. The league average is 40%. We're right at it. It's just you fall off the map. You got to avoid 0 to 4 on the clock. It's a great question, though. It's an interesting question, too, because I don't know if you can consciously decide to play into that zone. But I do wonder sometimes whether, I've said this before, like, have we lost a little bit of who we are? But most players don't want to play that way. It's hard. So you better be careful if you're trying to build your team that way and, you know, want players to keep playing. Hopefully now we can stop talking about the Jazz getting better without Rubio. I think that the conversation was misconstrued the entire time. Donovan's numbers are better when Rubio's not on the floor, but the team is not better. Like, that was just, but that's a hard differential for people. Last night, I thought it was interesting. We played 33 minutes with a point guard last night. We were plus 22. We were minus 5 in the other minutes. Is there a rift between Dante and Quinn last night? He was visibly upset. We all get what Quinn is trying to do leading into the playoffs, but pulling him after 2 minutes after a mistake really shook him. There's not a rift. And Dante was pissed, no question. But Quinn can't coach 14 other guys right now for the sake of Dante. Okay, unfortunately, Dante's been awful in his first 2 games back. That's not his fault. There's nothing to be misconstrued about that. Like, it's not, we're not beating up. That's just, that's hard. But, like, Dante played 9 minutes, had 2 turnovers and 3 fouls. And missed 2 shots. Like, we were minus 8 in Dante's 9 minutes. Like, he was bad. And he was bad the night before, too, right? So, there's not a riff. But Dante wants what's best for Dante, which is to just go out there and play and get better. And Quinn is coaching 15 guys. And those two things are not the same. Quinn gave Dante a pretty good rope against Oklahoma City. He went 0 for 5 with 2 turnovers in 15 minutes. Like, he was... Now, some of that's completely misleading. Because, I mean, I'm not trying to beat up. I really don't think there's – I'm not surprised by this at all. So I don't want to, like – this isn't like Dante sucks because Dante's not been very good. This is, like, not surprising to me at all. But, like, Dante, like, the Oklahoma City game, Dante got most of his minutes. I think he came back in with, like, 5 minutes left, didn't he? Like, the game was, maybe not. We took him out. We made our run, and then he didn't come back until the very final few minutes when we pulled the plug. He got a minute 32 at the end of the game. But I mean, like, Dante hasn't been good. So there's not a riff. Yeah, actually, there is a riff. Dante wants to play and get better, and Quinn has to coach 15 players, and those two things are not in line. Make sense? Does that mean, like, they don't get along or they're mad? Like, no. But I think that's a fair statement. Today's show is brought to you in part by Intercap Lending. This is a company that moved to Utah a few years ago and is expanding fabulously. It's really cool. They started advertising with us a little while back, and hopefully we've been a part of it. It's been really fun. 40-year lending company. Came in April of 2016. Josh Romney moved them here. They're headquarters in Utah. They're now employing well over, I don't even know what the number is, maybe over 300 people now. It was like 200 last time I checked. But, I mean, they just keep growing. They've got the new place in Tooele and two in Utah County and Ogden and place in Cottonwood. Why? Because they're a lending company that gets deals done. Real estate agents work with people that get deals done. Why? Because real estate agents get paid when it gets done. We all want to work with because we want to get done. And Locked On Jazz listeners are finding out, like Dave Thurman did the other day, that Steve Carter, who is our designed loan officer, we have one loan officer designed to all Locked On Jazz listeners. You can give Steve a call at 385-800-8528. And Dave Thurman, all I can say is Steve Carter is by far the best loan officer I've ever worked with. That's saying something because I've done my fair share of loans in my life. He was responsive, down-to-earth person to work with, which is rare. I'm sure to recommend him to anyone I know with the highest praise. Clayton and Sarah Wilson said the same thing. Steve Carter at Intercap Lending did a fantastic job with a refinance for Sarah and I. The process was seamless and very quick. We reached out with a time crunch. You really made it happen. Intercap and Steve is by far the best mortgage company we've dealt with. We recommend them to anyone. That's what I would tell you. Steve did mine as well. It was just great. Unbelievable. Call Steve, 385-800-8528. That's 385-800-8528. I feel very comfortable telling you to do that. Intercap Lending, NMLS, number 190465. For more information, visit intercaplending.com. All right, let's continue. What is Royce O'Neal's ceiling, or do you think he's hit it? Would a more athletic Joe Ingles be an outrageous thought? Yeah, it actually would be an outrageous thought because he's not a great ball handler and not a passer. So his development is going to be keyed on those things, his ability to pass and his ability to develop some of those type of skills would be the next step. He's become a much better shooter. He's become a much better rim finisher. But he's improving a great deal. But I don't think there's a ceiling. Hi from Greece. Is Denver the best first-round matchup? Yes, only because we don't know if Nikola Jokic is a defensive liability in the playoffs. And because they don't have playoff experience. Now, what about Portland has 10 straight playoff losses, so you might decide that that's a pretty good matchup, too. I'm proud of the way you and the Jazz and the fans handled the aftermath of the inappropriate banter. We will be better, even the ones who haven't done anything wrong. Yeah, it's interesting. Thank you. Are you involved with the team's decisions based on your geeky numbers? No, no one listens. No one wants to know what I have to say. Come on. Just a radio guy. Do you think we need to go more inside-out mentality with the dominance of our bigs last night? I think I dug into that earlier. Just it largely is dictated by what the opponent does. Your shot selection is inside is dictated by defense. Outside is dictated by offense. Rudy is great, but lately it seems a lot of the guys are trying to go at him one-on-one. Do you think this is more because they want to take the defense player of the year, or is there any chance it's something more to do with... She says... Draymond's comments and how they view Rudy now. No, I mean, I think Julius Randle and Giannis Antetokounmpo have a game where they go into your body and rise up into you, and I think you have to do that with Rudy because otherwise he's too long. You have to get into his body. I don't think Rudy played very well until last night for about a week. to. Like, I think that's actually why we didn't look as good, frankly. I'm just going to be completely frank. I give Rudy a lot of credit and a lot of praise. And so I would say that in this circumstance, I just don't think Rudy's been as good as until last night as he usually has been. He hasn't played with quite the same zest and fire and energy that I would say is the signature to Rudy. I could be wrong. He could disagree with me on that, but I give him a whole heck of a lot of praise, so I'll be honest on that on the flip side. So we'll see. I want Golden State round one. The position is perfect for our mentality surprise upset. Ooh, I don't. They'll be healthy. Less threes taken by Jazz. They look better. You always talked about the positives threes. What are the downsides? Long rebounds, allowing teams to dictate our offense. Brandon, I know this is your kick, and you can stay on the island. You, like, emailed me. Yeah, I love you. I love the passion. You can stay on your island. Your island's going to just be really lonely. I don't think it's going to get, like, a Haiti-esque earthquake where you lose all property, but it's going to have a really bad depression. You're going to have very little value in your homes on Mid-Range Island. Mid-Range Island, it's just not good. I've told you. Donovan Mitchell, the great players of the league, the scoring players of the league need to play in the mid-range to clear other items, but not a lot. And you just, there is not, there's not a rate of offensive rebounding is not, offensive rebounding is not higher on threes than it is on, or fast break is not higher. It's not true. None of it's true. These are myths. The numbers do not back them up. You do not score at a higher rate off a missed three than you do off a missed two. In fact, the exact opposite. The shot you score, the other team scores the most on, is a missed layup because everyone's to the basket and they go. A floor, well, floor space three is the single best possession to defend. You can stay on it. I'm curious how old you are. It's hard. I find myself, I know all the numbers, I'm deep into them, I'm a believer, I can see the metrics, it's undeniable, we've won a buttload of games this year because we shoot better shots than everyone else, last night's another one, and I find myself occasionally doing the same thing, where I go the other way and then I have to catch myself, because at 48 years old, I've been around it, and I think the other thing. Jacking up threes. No, jacking up mid-range twos. God forbid, that's the worst thing ever. Last night, what was last night? They took like 40 mid-range shots. Like, we won the game because of it. Well, we won by 20, but they took 32 mid-range shots last night. We took 15. That's such a big deal. Like, that is worth somewhere in the range, conservatively, of 5 points in the game. 5 points. Like, our QSQ last night, which is quantified shot quality, which is the number that tells you if average players were to take the shots we took compared to average players that the other team took, it's got to be through the roof last night. Give me a second. Pulling it up. Let's see. We had to have killed them last night. Yeah, our quantified shot quality last night was 56.6. Theirs was 51.5. 5 points. 100 shots, 5 points. Actually, 10 points. Just keep fighting it, Brandon. Keep fighting on your island. I love you for it. You're wrong. Is there a riff? Oh, wait. No, we already answered that. What do you think the Jazz do in the offseason to get to the next level for next season? I don't know, but I don't know. I don't know. I think it's – I'd be really surprised if we brought it back again. I just – there's a point where you've had the whole group together for too long. Hi, Rebecca. How was your game by yourself? How are we looking for the playoffs? I don't know yet. You know, I really don't. Like, I think we're fine. We're not great, guys. I mean, we're not. Like, we've gotten, the last 2 years, we've played teams in the first round of playoffs who have fundamental flaws and internal problems, and we've exposed both of them and been incredible to get to the second round of the playoffs. I don't know that we do that again this year. Lindsay should have gone after more players like Alec Burks. Brandon, actually, never mind. Your island is going to be bankrupt. It is going to get hit by a Haiti earthquake. You're going to be homeless with no economy. You're going to be treated, you're going to be in Puerto Rico and forgotten by the Trump administration if you're promoting more players like Alec Burks offensively. I'm sorry, Brandon. It is actually going to be dire. You're going to be all alone with no food, no electricity, and no government to support you. It's going to be a terrible, terrible, sad day. Great job addressing the Jazz news of late. Did Carmelo Anthony just retire? No, the league just decided that they weren't interested. Okay, Brandon, that's really funny. Brandon wanted to know if my password was threes. Bowler reported last night the Wolves were grounded in Denver. Do you know if that's still the case? I think they've landed. They took off around 9:30 this morning. They had a disastrous day yesterday. They spent like 8 hours in an executive terminal that had nothing. All right. You guys are great. Thanks. Have a wonderful day. Thanks for joining me live. Brandon, I love you. Well, that's strong. I don't love you, but I feel really bad about the economic dire situation your mid-range island's going to be on with Alec Burks as your key offensive player. Like, I love AB as a person, but, like, what's AB doing these days? He has not hit a three in 9 games in Sacramento. He's playing 10 minutes a night. His effective field goal percentage is 46.6. The league average is 51. He's never been league average. He's not even a good mid-range shooter. But you know why? Because there's almost no good mid-range shooters. Like, almost none in the entire league. That's what nobody understands. That is truly what nobody understands. Is that if you want everyone to shoot twos, that's great, but they got to make them. And nobody makes them. Nobody. I'm about to look it up to prove it. Brandon, you've made the entire show awesome. Entire show awesome. Mid-range shooting. Why does it say? No. Stunning. The NBA.com site's not working. That's terrific. What is? Why is it not working? It only has DeMar DeRozan for 7 mid-range shots. What is wrong with this? Oh, that's too bad. I was going to be able to have to go to the old site and find. Oh, here we go. Here we go. Here are the 10 guys who've taken the most long twos in the league that you want. LaMarcus Aldridge, 44%, 0.88 points per shot. DeMar DeRozan, 39.5, 0.7 whatever shots. Kevin Durant, 52.9, shoot the mid-range shot. Klay Thompson, 47%, probably can get away with it. Colin Sexton, 37.5. Russell Westbrook, 33%. C.J. McCollum, 50% on mid-range shots. Pretty good. That matters. That's a point of possession. That's a good shot. Bradley Beal, 43.6. He could take a few. Terrence Ross, 44. Kind of maybe. Kawhi Leonard, 48. It's 0.96 points per shot. It's okay. We're like done. Andrew Wiggins shoots a mid-range shot tonight. Every time he should jump up and cheer. 33.5. These are the guys who take the most of them in the NBA. But frankly, you got less chance of getting fouled on a mid-range shot than you do on anything else. Oh, you got to take though. You got to get in the paint more. Take the paint non-restricted. Donovan Mitchell's taking the third most amount of paint non-restricted area twos. He shoots 39% of those shots. Only Blake Griffin and De'Aaron Fox are worse than Donovan of guys who take a lot of those shots, and Dennis Schroeder. All right, see you guys.